Witness 8, War in Heaven. For now this fearful night there is no stir or walking in the streets, and the complexion of the element in favors like the work we have in hand, most bloody, fiery, and most terrible. Cassius, Act 1. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. Revelation chapter 12, verse 7. Nobody ever forgets being in a hurricane. Hurricane Archie was the first one I remember coming through Opelousas. I was 8 years old. What I remember is me and my brother sitting in our room looking out the bedroom windows. We watched as the power of the wind and rain grew and grew. We could see across the street the tall pecan trees just beyond the open pasture. Those trees were in Mr. Mack's yard, behind his store and house. At first, the trees swayed from side to side, as two people listening to the same music. Later, though, the wind got stronger and stronger, and more mixed up. Pushed out by the swirling winds, those pecan trees bent so low to the ground it didn't seem real. Up, down, side to side, those trees moved faster and faster, still together, but more excited. This was watching two people who really knew how to dance the zydeco, bending and twisting, but holding themselves on the ground. But it wasn't too long before we heard the tallest tree snap. When it broke, it made a crackling sound. We ran to Mama. Daddy was at J.S. Clark helping keep the storm refugees fed and comfortable. After Hurricane Audrey, I had hoped never to be in another hurricane. I guess I thought I could keep them away with my thoughts. No such possibility, not in Louisiana. Today, radio news was that a Hurricane Betsy had made up its mind to come to Louisiana, just like Soothsayer had said. Daddy told me. Daddy always kept up with the news. Every morning he listened to KSLO for the news in Creole and for that Cajun and Zydeco music. His favorite thing, though, was a newspaper. Even though he had to wait 2 days, he relied on the news from the Daily World. It took 2 days, you see, to get the newspaper across the walls. Anytime the paper came, though, and I mean any time, Daddy always brought one home to read. That's how come he knew how funny that Hurricane Betsy had been acting. By the time we got the newspaper this time, we already had a good feeling that it was coming. Lots of rain, and the wind was high. Daddy read his newspaper, and when he handed it to Mama, he told us Betsy would be in tomorrow. That's when I got on the phone to everybody. When I left home the next night, I knew I was going to die. As soon as Daddy found out that I walked out of our house in the middle of the night during a hurricane, he was going to kill me. I was trying to convince myself, though, that it was partly Daddy's fault. Hurricanes were just big storms to me, but Daddy seemed to know these big storms well. He told me that he would come and get me when the eye of the storm was coming overhead. He said we were going to go out and double-check everything that we had tied down earlier. Storm winds would be worse, he said, when the back of the storm comes through. The only reason I knew when the eye was close by was that when that happened, Daddy came and told me. So it was his fault, in a way, that I knew when to leave. Me and Daddy went out in the yard and found some things that weren't ours to begin with. It seemed that the storm had given us some new property, including half of a bicycle. Not much we could do with that. We still had to tie it down, so to stop it from doing damage to God knows what and God knows where. Back inside the house, Daddy said he was going to bed. Everybody else was already in bed. That's when I left. We had said that we would meet at J.S. Clark. A lot of people would be there anyway because it was the main shelter for people whose homes might not last through the storm or who lived in areas that would flood. Under the bleachers of the football field was the exact spot of our meeting. Because of the way the bleachers at J.S. Clark were built to support themselves, there was a large space under the bleachers between the legs of the bleachers and the shed. Lots of people could stand in that large space. I guess that's why people tended to throw things under there and to use that space to hide out from teachers. By the time I got there, everybody else was waiting for me. None of us really understood what was happening. All we knew was that Papa had said that a lot depended on us being there and being together. Like Papa Raphael had told me we should do, we went out onto the football field and stood in the middle of the field facing the bleachers. For a while, the rain stopped and everything was quiet. I looked up and realized that the eye of the storm was right over us now. That's when the haze came, and the rain and wind was suddenly all around us without touching us. As that wind swirled all around us, the moment seemed familiar to me. I had been here before. Coming from where I didn't know, through the haze there appeared to be 7 giant coins, medallions, hanging in the air. I could not see what held them there. These were the seals. Papa Raphael had told me how they looked. They were round in shape. They were as tall as a basketball goal and as wide as that height. Within the rounded borders, there were drawings in the metal, different shapes and figures. In the very center of each was the figure of a lamb. Each medallion was like the other, except the one on the end that was more decorated. In the center of that one, alongside the lamb, there was the figure of a giant lion. These were the seals that should have been laying flat, held down by the binders to hold time and life in order. Right now they were suspended in the air. I could not see what held them there. I could see. I noticed that there were things in the swirl standing in front of the seals. We just stood there without understanding what was happening. Out of the corner of our eyes, we watched each other, and looking straight ahead into the swirl, we watched them. One of the people things moved and came forward, stepping out of the swirling haze into the circle of quiet we stood in. It wore overalls and a raggedy straw hat. I felt like I had seen it before. Its head bent down. We could not see a face or whatever else there might have been to see. Slowly, though, the head rose, and just as I could make out the face, it said, "Robert, where you been like that, you?" I didn't answer. I couldn't. Not with what I was seeing. It looked like Mr. Tigasson. Mr. Tigasson, except that its eyes were glowing red, its teeth, too, glowing red, and they looked so sharp. That voice was like that, too, Mr. Tigasson's, but not. This voice had a boom to it, a big echoing sound that came from everywhere at once. What could I say? How could I answer? This wasn't like our usual playful teasing. When I looked away from Mr. Tigasson, I looked down and my breath caught. All of us stepped back at the same time. Alongside Mr. Tigasson was an alligator, a giant, monstrous alligator, an alligator that couldn't be real but was right in front of me and my friends. Its eyes looked like Mr. Tigasson's eyes, red, glowing red. Its teeth looked like Mr. Tigasson's teeth, long, sharp, red. This was a gator from hell. Slowly moving its head to follow our semicircle, it looked at each of us. When it looked at me the second time, its jaws moved as if it was trying to talk. That Mr. T-Garçon thing spoke with a voice that was so wet and slimy. It felt like it was crawling up my legs.
Been like that, you.
Nearly fainting, I fell to my knees. I saw Dolores falling. Iron Horse tried to catch her, but they both hit the ground on their knees. Kool-Aid was sweating so much it looked like rain falling from his face. Earl stood with his eyes closed, mumbling something no one could hear. Ghost was screaming, but somehow I couldn't see him like I could see everybody else. Mr. T-Garçon laughed deeply, horribly.
So easy, it said. We have won, and it was so easy.
This was what Papa Raphael had warned me about. You must not question what you see, Papa had said. You must not be defeated by what you see. When defeat seems to have come, join together and wait. Do not doubt what you see. Robert, call then for your people to get ready. I crawled to each of my friends and pulled us all into a huddle. Everyone looked at me, and I looked out at Mr. T-Garçon and Hell's Gator. I forced myself to believe. I said it first as a whisper, then louder, then over and over. My friends started to say it too. We believe. We believe. We believe. We believe. You believe what? Said the laughing, booming voice. You believe what? We believe. We believe. We believe. The swirl started to change color to redden, and the wind seemed to get stronger, faster. Rain started pelting us so hard, it felt like pebbles hitting us, tearing our skin. We believe, we believe, we believe. Laughing again and coming towards us with Hell's Gator by its side, Mr. T-Garçon said,
You believe what?
That you are real, a voice said. Sounding like a lion's roar, those words felt like they came from within our huddle. From within us, the six, they hadn't. None of us had opened our mouths. We looked around and we saw a figure come hurtling through the swirl from behind us. It was Dice. His eyes gleamed a shiny blackness, a pure blackness. When he spoke, his voice, actually coming out of our huddle, roared again like a lion's, That you are real! We believe that you are real. Mr. T-Garçon and Hell's Gator stopped moving forward. Something had changed. Dice came to us. He helped each of us back onto our feet. As he helped each of us to our feet, Dice was talking, telling us, I thought I was going crazy. I knew the hurricane was here, but I felt like I needed to go outside. I thought I was going crazy. Now the swirl around us was spinning so fast it was a blur. Dice was still talking. I opened the front door of the house to look out at the wind and rain, and I saw y'all standing here on the football field. It didn't make any sense to me, not at all. Now the wind was howling, sounding of a dog that's been hit by a car, except it sounded of a pack of hurt dogs all howling at the same time. Somehow we could still hear Dice. When I saw what was happening, I knew y'all needed my help. I looked and I just jumped through the doorway and was here. Dice was breathing hard. I came to help. Coach Paxton says it to me all the time now. He says, Rodney, sometimes you have to put yourself aside to get something important done. That's what he says. We were all standing again. Dice had gotten us to our feet. Walking to each of us, one by one, Dice grabbed us by the shoulders, pulled us close and whispered something in our ears. I don't know what he whispered to Kool-Aid, or to Ghost, or to Dolores, or to Earl, or to Iron Horse. I don't know. But what he whispered to me was a shock. He whispered, "There's always evil floating around in the world, Robert. So there's always a need for those of the bon secours to fight on the side of good, to be God's remedy. This time it's y'all." The words were Papa Raphael's. And when Dice whispered those words, the voice was Papa Raphael's too. "There's always evil floating round in the world." This was what Papa Raphael had told us the night he called us all to his house to talk with him. All of us except Dice. Dice hadn't been there. In shock, I looked into Dice's face and found him smiling. Letting his eyes go from one to the other, Dice stood in front of Iron Horse, and Iron Horse called out, "You know, cowards die a lot before they really do. The brave only dies once." Now I smiled, and when I looked around, I saw that all of my friends were smiling. We turned to face the enemy, held hands, and then in that lion's voice, Dice roared, "Now we are seven! We are the seven!" A confidence surged through us, a hope came over us. We were in a new semicircle, all seven holding hands. We took up Dice's words and made it a chant. "We are the seven. We believe that you are real. We are the seven. We believe that you are real." What we chanted mattered. Hell's Gator and the Mr. Tigar something backed away.
Still, you are nothing because you do not understand.
The Mr. Tigar Saw Thing was speaking, and it and Hell's Gator were once again moving toward us. "You think that your number makes you powerful,
but your number is nothing. This is over. We come for you now, so that the world that we have put out of time will go on out of time.
We are the seven. We are the seven," we chanted. Somehow, though, it wasn't the same. Something was wrong. I think we had relaxed. It was too soon. When Dice had come, we had gotten stronger and confident. We were filled with hope. Dice had helped us through our first moment of doubt. Who could have believed what was in front of us? Who could have believed that this was Mr. Tigasson? Who could have believed what we were seeing before us, a monstrous, satanic alligator, Hell's Gator? Dice, who had for so long been without discipline, saved us through discipline. His voice had been discipline itself. He had given us the discipline chant, "We are the seven, we believe that you are real." That is what had saved us. We saw our enemy weakened for a time, but by relaxing too soon, by gaining false confidence, now we were losing ground. Mr. Tigasson and Hell's Gator started to come toward us again. You could hear each step they took. Their steps sounded like a fisherman sloshing through a swamp bog. As they came toward us, I could feel a force pushing against me and trying to surround me. Their power was working, and we were losing. That's when Earl began to shout, "I understand! I understand!" "Robert," Earl said, "Robert, you gotta leave the center. Robert, you're not the right one right now. Not now. Not anymore. Move to the end, Robert. Robert, the Ides of September are upon us." A jolting bolt of lightning, my dream came into my head. That dream where, one by one, I lose my friends. Dolores would be first. I saw it. I knew it. And in that moment, I knew how each of my friends would suffer and that I would be last. I would have to live knowing that I could have saved them by letting things stay like this, out of time, with walls that weren't supposed to be there. I knew that if I moved now, my dream would all come true. Something told me that thing, that Mr. Tigasson thing and Hell's Gator both knew, that I finally saw the whole picture of the future. Mr. Tigasson smiled, that red, sharp smile. It laughed, that deep, crazed laugh. Then it spoke to me.
Robert, where you been like that, you? What kind of friend you gonna be, Robert? You don't want your friends to be hurt when this is over, do you?
It was funny that we were friends at all. We were all mutants. Outcast mutants, all seven of us. It wasn't that our classmates didn't like us. It was more that they didn't understand us. Earl lived with his aunt and nobody knew anything about his parents. And Earl was mysterious, spooky. Iron Horse didn't have a daddy, just a mama. At least none of us heard anything about a daddy for Iron Horse. And then there was just the fact that he was Iron Horse, so big, so much stronger than anybody, so much like he was already a man. Ghost. Ghost lived with his mama in a house, but half of the house was a hole-in-the-wall nightclub. And Ghost had that reputation for peeing on himself and for being like a ghost. Kool-Aid was cool. Before, living with his grandparents, nobody noticed him much. After, Kool-Aid was cool, but some people thought he was too cool. After, some people said his coolness was too much, an air conditioner turned down too low. Dolores. Dolores was quiet, maybe too confident. She lived out in the country away from town. Some of the girls thought she acted too right all the time. Not proper, but there were things she just wouldn't do, and she didn't care what anybody else thought about that. Dice had always been in with a rough crowd. Then he started changing. Then he who wasn't who he used to be, and he who people wanted him to be, was different. Me? I was too serious about my music. In the band room practicing my saxophone or going to the nuns' convent to practice a voice solo when my classmates wanted to do nothing or talk about girls. And I was friends with all kinds of people who didn't get along with each other. My classmates thought that meant I would have to betray one friendship for another. I, too, was a mutant. Somewhere along the way, we mutants became friends. And Papa Raphael had said, something happened when we were together. Something happened when we stuck together. There seemed to be a power in our accepting being mutants and accepting each other, mutants though we were, even to each other. Now all that was being tested. This was it. I had to have faith in us mutants working together. There was one thing that Daddy told me over and over again. I could hear his voice now telling me that a man has to know when it's his time and when it's not. And now I had to decide whether I had faith in us together. This was it. I let go of my grip on Iron Horse and reached for Dolores. Somehow I knew. Dolores had always been the most hopeful of us. She had always been pulling us together, always keeping us together because she was filled with hope. I pulled her into the center of our semicircle, and I went to the far end and held Dice's hand. Now our semicircle was different. Dolores was the center. Going out to her left was Iron Horse, Dice, and then me. Going out to her right was Ghost, Earl, and then Kool-Aid. This was right. Dolores slowly lifted her head and spoke. We are the seven, and we have hope. Suddenly, she looked so different. Her face almost glowed. Our semicircle tightened around her. She lifted her head and spoke again in a voice that was filled with authority. Now this will end. Time will be put back in order. The first seal shall be closed until the appointed time, which only the Holy One knows. Its unsealing was wrong, a breach forced in time, no more. Mr. Tigasson roared in a deafening, deep laughter. Who are you, child? Who are you, child? To speak to us in this way, we will crush you, all of you. We are the seven, and we have hope, we chanted together. So? Came the reply. We are the seven, and we have hope, said the Lord, speaking alone. A hope sent by the Lion of Judah. Hearing those words, the horrors before us stopped laughing and stopped moving toward us. A light, a glow, seemed to flow from our semicircle, from us. That light flowed from us in the shape of a triangle. We seven were the base of that triangle. From each end went a straight line of light that joined in the front of us into a point, making an upside down V. And the glow from us filled that triangle and at the same time flowed back to us, holding us firm, feeling like it was protecting us. Then, at the point of the triangle, something happened. A man appeared with his back to us, tall, wiry, brown skin, with hair to his neck, his long arms outstretched, with wings for hands. Dolores spoke. We are the seven, and we have hope. Then, as if his voice were a louder echo, the man angel said, a hope sent by the Lion of Judah. The Mystique, I saw something let loose in anguish, howl. We are sent armed with the hope of the Lion of Judah, the man angel said. Suddenly, continuing its anguished howl, Hell's Gator began to back away, but the Mystique I saw thing came forward, red gleaming teeth, and spoke, saying, I am that which was forced to hold the first seal. Mystique I saw thing came forward, red gleaming teeth, and spoke, saying, I am that which was forced to hold the first seal in place. Because of my rebellion against the beginning, I have been used like nothing more than sealing wax. But now, the sealing wax is loosed by the human's own hate for each other. Now I, the sealing wax, once again owns a hot, hateful strength. And I and my servants are here to conquer. To my own surprise, right then I began to sing. People, get ready. Loud and clear, I was singing those words about a train that's coming. Those words that said, no room for the hopeless sinner. And then the other mutants joined in. Dice, then Iron Horse, and the rest were singing with me. Those words that said, all you need is faith. We sang, and the song moved through us like a church hymn. We sang the line that said, faith would help us hear the train that's coming. And with that chorus, in that moment, the man angel changed, growing even taller, arms longer, his hand wings becoming as long as he was tall. Then he spoke with a voice that did not boom, but surrounded and softly touched everything. His voice stopped the storm swirl. The man angel spoke, saying, you still have not understood. Your attack has been drawn to these seven because you have seen the glow of their difference. They stand outside of the expected, for their spirits are ordained to travel as warriors. To the rest of the world, they are mutants, but they endured being mutants to be prepared to fight you, whose weapon is an unholy, bland sameness. I am here because they drew themselves together despite your attack, despite you sending Kushma. Now their spirits will overwhelm you. The Mr. Tigasawthing spoke. I and my servants are here because of the heat of the self-hate that humans have caused to grow in their fear of the different. That heat has loosed me and mine, allowing the seal to detach and open, and we will keep it open. Time is out of place. I hate the difference rules. We will keep it that way. No! This is not to be, the man angel said. You are still nothing more than sealing wax that has become too warm to hold. I am God's remedy for that. For I am sent by the Lion of Judah. I am sent to help these seven servants. They have found in their fellowship of difference a hope strong enough to face you and defeat you. The first seal was loosed, but because of the hope of these seven, the first seal will now be resealed, made whole again. Go now to your rightful place, or be doomed to ride in this storm for eternity. Go! Now doing its own anguish howling, Hell's Gate began to move further back, along with the Mr. Tigasson thing. We kept singing, now about our pity for those who tried to hide from the kingdom throne. We kept singing. In a kind of slow motion, Hell's Gate and Mr. Tigasson, that Mr. Tigasson thing, went and stood directly behind the first hole and then seemed to melt into each other and to surround the lip of that hole. We watched the other people things melt away in the same way. Somehow, knowing it was my job, with the sound of our singing around me, I stepped forward and went past the man angel and pushed the first seal down into place, covering over the hole that had changed time. All the other seals moved in unison with the first seal and settled into place to cover a hole. When I had put the seal down, I turned to walk back to my place with my friends. I looked up at the man angel and saw that the head had a lot of eyes and some horns, but somewhere in the middle of that head I saw, Papa Raphael's face. Now when the seals clicked in place, we heard the Mr. Tigasson things and Hell's Angels, Hell's Gators, anguish ringing over the sounds of our singing and over the sound of the storm around us, and the man angel was gone. Out of nowhere there was a roaring wind and rain knocking us down, the back end of the storm hitting us. Clinging to each other and helping each other, we ran for cover under the bleachers, with the wind of the hurricane now released, ripping up the blankets, ripping up the seating planks above our heads. We knew we couldn't stay here. We had to get inside. But we kept looking at each other, touching and holding each other, wanting to ask each other questions, but not knowing how to start. Eventually, we took off running and made it inside to the gym. No time to talk even then, though, because Daddy was inside and he saw us, saw me, and started coming my way. I knew I was dead.